Colectivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
This is Adán Aguirre on behalf of the Raíces Collective. I had a chance to sit down with author and artist Tim Z. Hernandez last week for the following interview. I'm here with Tim Z. Hernandez, poet, performance artist, novelist. Now, is it Latino poet, performance artist, novelist? Does being defined or categorized a little more specifically either as a type of artist or as an artist of a specific ethnic background in any way change or affect the way we approach you or your art?
No, you know, for me personally, those are just kind of, I think, touchstones, really. They're not really, I don't think they encompass anything near what I try and do. I mean, ultimately, I think what I'm doing is storytelling, you know, sharing stories. And, you know, but if I go out and kind of say that, you know, people won't get it as much as when you say author, performance artist, all these other things, you know, but I'm not, you know, I'm not really, I don't adhere to any of those labels strictly, so.
Skin Text came out in 2004 on Heyday Books, the 2006 yeah. American Book Award from the Before Columbus Foundation, the winner of the James Duval Phelan Award from the San Francisco Foundation, and the Zora Neale Hurston Award for writers of color dedicated to their communities.
Right.
What was that like, winning that sort of acclaim?
You know, those that for Skin Text, I mean, that was my first book, and that was, you know, like 10 years ago, so... Mm-hmm. You know, for that was, again, my first book, that was just a lot of sort of, you know, I think a real sort of confirmation of, you know, my path, you know, as a young, as a writer, coming of age, sort of emerging writer, you know, artist, you know, so those awards obviously were fantastic, and I really appreciated them, and you know, but really more than anything, they were just confirmation that I was doing, I was on the right path, so, and they've really sort of, you know, helped boost the confidence, I mean, you know, so you can continue to be resilient in this kind of business.
Well, what follows is one hell of a resume. Your first novel, Breathing in Dust, on Texas Tech University Press, was featured on NPR's All Things Considered and received the Premio Aztlán Prize in 2010 from the National Hispanic Cultural Center here in Albuquerque.
It was a big honor, you know. I mean, obviously, you know, I know that the Premio Aztlán Prize is a prize that's put together, you know, as a sort of collaboration between the, you know, National Hispanic Cultural Center there in Albuquerque and Rodolfo Anaya, you know, a wonderful author and sort of someone I've looked up to coming up also. And so, you know, it was, again, just another sort of pat on the back from a hand that I had long since looked up to. So, you know, a fantastic sort of opportunity for me. So, yeah, and very appreciative of that.
In 2011, the Poetry Society of America named you one of 16 new American poets. 2012, you're a faculty member at the National Latino Writers Conference. You've collaborated with Grammy Award-winning classical composer Eugene Friesen, with Carlos Paez and the B-side players, really good friends of mine, Raíces, the Latin hip-hop band 40 Watt Hype. You have two collections of poetry, Natural Takeover of Small Things on University of Arizona Press, and Culture of Flow on Monkey Puzzle Press. Those came out in 2013.
Actually, Culture of Flow came out in December of 2012, and then in February of 2013 of this year was The Natural Takeover of Small Things. Those were two books of poetry that I had been working on for a long time, and then this past late August, Mañana Means Heaven, the novel came out. Yeah.
I'm telling you, if I read any more of your accomplishments, we won't have any time to listen to anything from you. Where do you find the time?
You know, I make a lot of sacrifices, as any writer, author, and other artist would tell you. And, you know, I have a family with three kids and my wife, and my wife's also a musician and a singer. So she's, you know, in the arts, and she understands the sacrifices that this kind of path, life path requires. But, you know, it's a collaboration between myself and my family, you know, it's changed my writing process. You know, certainly I used to, when I was younger, I would need long stretches of time to write. And as I started having children, I'd found that I could figure a way to write in even a 5-minute stretch of time. So, you know, I've changed my sort of style of writing and my approach to writing.
You know, in Latino families, as important as where you're going is knowing where you came from. Where did you come from? Where did you grow up? What's your background?
Yeah, you know, I'm the son of migrant farm workers, you know, originally from South Texas and also from Las Cruces in Beni, New Mexico. That's where my folks are from. And then, you know, I was born and raised in the San Joaquin Valley in California, which is a big agricultural, you know, space there, region there. And, you know, what? Early on, my parents traveled a lot, you know, working the fields, Wyoming, Colorado, all these places here in the Southwest. And, you know, I remember, my mother was always, you know, I never really read much as a child, but I was always well-read, too. You know, my folks always read us books. And, you know, we would, especially during these long sort of road trips, you know, migrant working trips that we would take, and they would have like only two books in the car. And then when they'd get tired of those two books and reading them to us over and over, my father would start to, as most fathers do, you know, would start to turn these tales into like other, you know, he'd be bored of hearing the same story. So he'd turn them into something and say, let me tell you what really happened. That's not what happened to Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Let me tell you about the first bear. And then he's like, you know, started spinning some kind of wild story about it. And so it was, you know, from a sort of very sort of oral storytelling background, I think was sort of my early influence, but certainly traveling also, and then the life of a migrant farm worker also, yeah.
You know, I used to ask my grandma how come she had so many stories, and she would always say, because the truth hurts so much.
Beautiful, wow. Yeah.
I'm here with Tim Z. Hernandez, who will be reading at Bookworks on Wednesday, November 4th, 2013, at 7 p.m. His new book is Mañana Means Heaven. Well, I was going to ask you about your past accomplishments, but 2013 has been a hell of a year for you, my friend, starting with your work on the Los Gatos plane crash memorial. Tell me about that. One of my favorite songs is Ballad of the Deportees, in this case, the version by New Riders of the Purple Sage.
Oh, yeah, that's a great version, too. There's a lot of amazing versions of that song. You know, and you know, the ironic part is that 2012 was so much work, you know, and it took a lot of sacrifice. My family, 2012, that in my New Year's resolution on the last day of December of 2012, I said, you know, 2013, I'm going to lay back. I'm going to totally lay back, and I'm going to, like, you know, be home more. And this has been the most rewarding and at the same time most taxing year of probably my whole career so far. You know, with the release of the two books, but then also this the book of poetry and the novel that just came out, but also with the Deportees Project, you know, the 28 Mexicano brothers and sisters that died in a plane crash in 1948 that Woody Guthrie wrote the famous sort of poem about that became a song later. And, you know, that story is really a sister story to Mañana Means Heaven, to the novel, because I was actually doing the research on Mañana Means Heaven when I discovered the newspaper that mentioned that had the headline of this plane crash. And as I was, my book Mañana Means Heaven wasn't done yet. It was almost done, but I hadn't finished it. And when I already had the idea for this next book. And so as soon as I was done with Mañana Means Heaven, I mean, there was an overlap. Some of my research, even from Mañana Means Heaven, informed this plane crash, you know. Maybe it's good actually to give the listeners some context about the plane crash, you know.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, so in 1948, there were 28 Mexican workers who were here, and they're being deported from Oakland to San Diego, and the plane crashed down in Los Gatos Canyon in Coalinga, California, there in the San Joaquin Valley. And when the plane crashed, it killed everybody, all 32 people aboard, four crew members and 28 Mexicanos that were being deported. And the newspapers picked it up and mentioned only the four crew members, told about their lives, the backstory and all that, but also said, and 28 deportees. Woody Guthrie at the time picked that up and basically was, you know, outraged by that omission and wrote a poem about it. And that became the famous song that we all hear today, the Deportees playing right at Los Gatos, that, you know, Bruce Springsteen and Bob Dylan and Dolly Parton, you know, they've all recorded. And that's what my book is about. This research has been about finding out the names of all the people aboard and finding out their stories, and, you know, finding all the sort of research, investigative documents, of the sort of investigative reports around the plane crash, just all the various sort of the truth behind what happened and who these people were. And that's the book I'm working on right now.
Now, Tim, a lot of people would have just rolled another one and, you know, thought, and that would have been enough just thinking about it or, you know, pondering that story. But, I mean, you took it to the extreme, man. You found out the names of all of these people. You spearheaded a memorial in their name, in their honor, in their memory. And that was dedicated, what, in April of this year?
It was the memorial actually was dedicated in September, on Labor Day, September 2nd. Mm-hmm. You know, and well, you know, I think the sort of astonishing part is just that it took, you know, with only 1 year of hard work, but 1 year from the time we had the idea to put this memorial headstone with listing all of their names. Because I guess it's important also to tell the listeners that, you know, before this, for the last 65 years, they were buried in, they've been buried in a mass grave. The 28 Mexicans have been buried in a mass grave, and with only a headstone marker that said, that was anonymous, that 28 Mexican citizens are buried here. It's basically what it said. And so, our effort was to put this new headstone there, listing all of their names. And from the time of the idea to the time of its actual installation was 1 year. So, you know, yeah, September 2nd, we installed it, took, you know, donations and people supporting from all across the country. So it was a, you know, just amazing sort of thing to be a part of.
Fantastic, man. To finally bring closure and dignity to the memory of those trabajadores and their families, truly an awesome undertaking and accomplishment, Tim. I can't tell you how impressive that is, how overdue that was.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
You're talking about your new book, Mañana Means Heaven. I won't say you take up where Kerouac left off, how cliche, but for sure you find the voice, soul, the life of Bea Franco, the real Mexican girl, and we get to hear her story well beyond the chapter she inhabits in Kerouac's classic. It is so beautiful, so compelling, and I'll tell you this, it is just an amazing piece of work. Your inspiration for that?
Yeah, you know, just like the plane crash story, you know, my original intention was never to actually go looking for the individuals of the plane crash, or certainly my original intention wasn't to look for Terry, you know, Bea Franco, the real Bea Franco, who Kerouac called the Mexican girl in his book On the Road. The idea was to fictionalize that, her story. But, you know, I think if any good writer, you know, worth their sort of weight in gold is, you know, you got to do the research. You got to go out and start looking and seeing if there are other books written about her and all that. And that part of the process is when I realized that there were over 22 Kerouac biographies out in the world that had mentioned this woman, Bea Franco, and sort of her you know, role in Kerouac's career and life. And yet none of them had ever claimed to have found her or spoken to her directly. They were all taking Kerouac's narratives to be fact. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I set out to not find Bea Franco again, but to maybe try and locate, at least make an honest attempt at locating her son and her daughter, you know, her family, to see if I could, you know, just ask some questions and all that. And, you know, when I found the family, this again was about a 2-year journey, and I had from about 2009 to 2008 to 2010, I was looking for them. And in 2010, I discovered, after a couple of trips to the East Coast, back and forth, I was living in California in Fresno at the time, and looking for her, trying to find all the clues of where her family might be, whereabouts and all that. And I discovered that she lived about a mile and a half from my home in Fresno, and that she was still alive.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was incredible. So, you know, right away, I mean, you know, it took a lot of talking with the family at first, because you know, they had never heard of this legacy. They never, you know, her children had never heard of Kerouac. They were the first ones I spoke with. They didn't want to let me really speak to their mother until until they vetted me, you know, until they made sure I was who I claimed to be, this author, you know, because it was pretty weird, you know, as you can imagine, a surreal situation. Sure. Here's this guy knocking on the door saying, you know, I know your mother had an affair 65 years ago, and I want to write about it, you know. So, after several conversations, and I showed them these letters that she had wrote to Kerouac, that were, I got permission from the New York Public Library. You know, they had them there in Kerouac's archives. And when I got permission to publish these letters, they gave me copies of them. And I showed that to the family, the copies of their own mother's letters 65 years ago. And when they saw that, then they instantly knew that I wasn't lying, you know, that I was telling the truth about the story. And so I finally got to meet Bea and speak with her, and we ended up, you know, obviously becoming friends, and I had several interviews with her, and that's what informed the book that I wrote, Mañana Means Heaven.
And you were able to deliver to Bea Franco a copy of Mañana Means Heaven just weeks before she passed away. Amazing. Again, you're coming down to New Mexico on November 19th. You're going to be in Santa Fe at a place called Collected Works.
And that's
also,
correct, yeah.
Also at Bookworks here in Albuquerque in the North Valley on November 20th. Are you going to be reading from Mañana Means Heaven? Or?
Yeah. Actually, that's what I'm really doing, is I'm going around promoting it. Like I said, it just came out at the end of August, first part of September, the book came out. And so I'm traveling around, just doing a lot of sort of reading from it and signing. So that's what I'll be doing there, yeah.
You know, they say that starving artists are a dime a dozen, but you're a working author and you have a day job.
Yeah, I do have a day job.
What do you do?
I do. Fortunately, you know, I work for the I work for two sort of a fusion of two organizations. One is the Colorado Humanities and Center for the Book, and so you know they're both. One is the state affiliate for the National Endowment of the Humanities, and the other one is a state affiliate of the National Library of Congress. And my job is here in Colorado. It's to I'm the statewide coordinator for writers in the schools. So I hook up professional authors. I train them to go into schools and teach, you know, poetry and prose to young kids, students from kindergarten through high school. And then I set them up with residencies, and we get in there and we teach writing to the kids is what we're doing. So that's my day job. And fortunately, I get to work from home right now. So that's what's allowed me a lot of time also to, you know, to build my time around what I need to do, you know.
Right on, man. You will reap what you sow, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been a lot of work, but very fruitful, very rewarding.
Tim Z. Hernandez, I know you have a lot of things to do, so I won't delay you, but what do you have coming up for 2014? And what can you tell us about the National Latino Writers Conference coming up in May of 2014?
You know what? I mean, the National Latino Writers Conference, again, is one of those sort of, I think, those instances, one of those kind of events where, you know, there's magic, and there's no other way to say it. There's magic in the sort of collaborations and the community that comes together of writers and authors and folks that are interested in literature. You know, it's a rare opportunity to bring folks like that together. And in a place like Albuquerque, no less, where there's so much rich history, it just makes a perfect setting. So, you know, I've had, again, I owe a lot of my career to just to that conference alone. You know, it's where I met my agent. It's where I received an award. Just so much great stuff that comes out of that conference. As for myself in 2014, you know, I'm starting now to kind of shop around this manuscript about the plane crash, and hopefully in 2014 I'll see a contract to get the book published. So that's what I'm hoping in 2014.
Right on.
Yeah.
Tim Z.
Yeah.
Hernandez, thank you so much for joining us on Espejos Aslan. We'll see you on November 20th at Bookworks.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Take care.
Right on, man. Thank you so much, Tim.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Adam.
Right
Appreciate
on.
It.
I'll see you then.
Okay. Bye-bye.